If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Hope everyone had a great weekend. I know that might have been a little difficult, but listen, the fall weather is on its way, so that should give you reason to be happy on its own, or something to look forward to. We got a big show today, a lot of things going on locally, a lot of stuff to get caught up on. We're going to talk about Jeremy Matlow had a press conference and made a proposal about moving the ball forward with some ethics proposals, ethics ideas. They're not new, I will tell you that. He is obviously using this opportunity to try to lead on this issue, but, you know, regardless that they're not new, they are still news in the sense that the Independent Ethics Board has asked for much the same in terms of new lobbyist regulations. So we'll go over those. And we'll go over the six that he announced. I agree with most of what he says. There are a couple of things there that I want to, with a little nuance, explain to you why I disagree with that position. And so stay tuned for that. I mean, one of them includes this competitive bid policy that, you know, he thinks that everything should be competitively bid. And while that is surely a good soundbite, I'm going to explain to you why that's not always a good idea. And obviously then that can, you know, you can debate that with your colleagues. But competitive bids are definitely most of the time the right way to go. And that's why the city of Tallahassee has that policy. But there are also situations where it's not in the best interest of the city. And we'll explain why. Also going to talk about, you know, some of the press coverage here of the COVID situation. You know, I have refrained from talking a little bit about specific reporters, although I think the time has come now, to address an article, that showed up in the Tallahassee Democrat, comparing COVID to the Hunger Games here in schools. And listen, there is something in the school of journalism and look, I wasn't educated as a journalist, meaning that my four-year degree is not in journalism. I have a couple other degrees, but you can do a lot of reading and find out exactly some of the basic tenets of journalism is to be sure and let your reader know about context. And when someone says that you're waiting for the next person to die in high school and no one has died, you might want to provide that context. So we'll go through that. It's getting, you know, I ran into Superintendent Hannah at a sporting event, and, you know, obviously he has got to deal with this on a daily basis. And, you know, there's no doubt that everybody wants this COVID pandemic to go away for obvious reasons, but the not so obvious reasons are the toll it is taking on our leaders. And, you know, and I think it's gonna bleed over and impact other institutions in our community. Like, you know, you look at Leon County government now, you know, mandating vaccines for people to keep their jobs. You look how journalists are starting to cover this issue. It's something that we just all hope is going to be over soon. But we'll talk about again the context here. You know, I don't think it's a shock that some of the reporting is gotten emotional. But, you know, I want to focus on what's going on here locally. I mean, we had a school board member that made the comment that we can't teach kids if they're dead. And again, this has got to be put in some kind of context. We can't just have our leaders making statements like this and getting away with it. And again, the headline of comparing COVID with Hunger Games. I mean, yes, someone in high school said that. That doesn't mean that, you know, the newspaper of record would print that. I mean, why would you print that? That's like printing someone that's saying is the earth is flat and making a story out of that. Anyway, we'll get into that at the bottom of the hour. And our last segment, we'll go on the, we'll go over the Leon County regular meeting that's taking place today. A couple of interesting issues on the agenda there. And so we'll run through some of those. And in our remaining moments of our last segment, we'll talk about an article that Tallahassee Reports wrote about the Thomasville Road multi-use path, something that came to my attention after a couple of phone calls, believe it or not. But there's a group here, the CRPTA. I'll look at during the break exactly what that stands for. I think it's Capital Regional Planning Transportation Agency. And so they're looking at building a multi-use path from Midtown down to the Market District in Thomasville Road up near I-10. I thought it was a great idea, but boy, I got a couple of phone calls a couple of people that are concerned about safety. So we'll touch on that a little bit. Wanted to, before we get out of this segment, go ahead and touch on a couple other things here. Like I said, a lot going on. Ron DeSantis announced this morning that the state will end the FSA, Florida Standards Assessment Testing, which evaluates students in language, arts, and math each year. He made the announcement down in Miami, calling the FSA antiquated. Corcoran, the education commissioner who was there with the governor, said eliminating the standardized test will empower parents and teachers. So they're going to start looking at legislation to get rid of that and do some progress monitoring during the middle of the year. You know, I think that the Education Association is on board with this, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. Wanted to get that out to you because it is breaking news this morning. And then I wanted to touch briefly on the sentencing of former city commissioner Scott Maddox. That took place on Thursday after we were off the air. Mr. Maddox got 5 years from Judge Hinkle. Looks like he'll serve between 4 and 5. Some people have said this is a light sentence. If you go back and really read the details behind what has happened since Mr. Maddox was indicted, I think that Judge Hinkle said that he did get a break on the sentencing for cooperating with the feds. But you have to understand that Mr. Maddox has lost his law license. He, from what I have read, lost his city pension. And you might say, well, that's not much for an elected official. But no, you know, he was an elected official for almost 15 years. So that is something that is significant. He is being fined by the IRS in the 6 digits. And so, look, I don't think that... While I think people from an emotional standpoint would have liked, who were maybe more impacted by this or more emotionally attached to it, would have liked to have seen a 20-year sentence. You know, I think from the human side that there is a lot of suffering even in this 5-year sentence. So anyway, that was handed down. Now, real quick pivot, JT Burness will be sentenced on October 28th. His lawyers have made a motion that after the jury verdict, have made a motion, it was reported today, they wanted Judge Hinkle to reconsider the verdict and dismiss that verdict. That is evidently something that routinely happens, sort of a last-ditch effort, and is rarely granted. But that motion was made in Judge Hinkle's court, and so we'll see what happens with that. But again, the sentencing for JT Burness will be... at the end of October, October 28th. So, all right, when we get back, we'll go over this Matlow press conference, which I actually attended and got to talk to Commissioner Matlow. We'll go over the specific points, some of the things that I agree with and disagree with. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship of Above the Fold. All right, turning to Commissioner Jeremy Matlow's press conference on Friday, where he addressed the sentencing of former City Commissioner Scott Maddox and made what he called 6 common sense reforms related to local government ethics. Matlow said yesterday's sentencing of former Mayor and City Commissioner Scott Maddox and former Downtown Improvement Authority Director Paige Carter-Smith on public corruption charges marks a milestone in the history of Tallahassee City government. He noted that the end of the public corruption trial is only the beginning of those who fight for progress and justice in Tallahassee. Now, his reforms, and I'm going to go ahead and go through them real quick and then go back and get more detail, wants to close the lobbyist loophole, expand whistleblower protections. That's when employees, you know, want to be able to tell what they know. Ending no-bid contracts, and I'm going to comment on that. Banning for life anyone convicted of honest services fraud. Not a lot of detail on that one. Sounds pretty general and punitive. Number five, a complete audit of all contracts, policies, and personnel decisions influenced by former Commissioner Maddox. And number six, a vendor code of ethics. So those are the six things that he's proposed. And I think, you know, I think I agree wholeheartedly with maybe three out of the six. So let's go through them real quick. So closing the lobbyist loophole. This gets to the point, and this is not a difficult one to get behind, is that, you know, the idea is that a lobbyist is someone that is being paid to privately or being paid by private interest to influence government policy. And a lot of people have said, oh, well, you know, I'm not lobbying. I'm a consultant. But they show up in these meetings with city staff or elected officials. The whole idea is to close that loophole and say, look, you know, I don't care if you call yourself a lobbyist. If you're being paid by someone who is seeking to influence government policy, you are by definition, our definition, a lobbyist. And within this recommendation, they argue that they want the public officials should keep contact logs from meetings with lobbyists and all agendas should disclose who registered to lobby on each item. All very good, I think, recommendations, things that have been made by the Independent Ethics Board. And as I said earlier, this isn't about Jeremy Matlow being you know, so smart to come up with these ideas. What he's doing is getting ahead of this and trying to get some momentum to get these things passed. So number one for me is a clear winner. Number two, expanding whistleblower protections. All employees should feel protected and safe coming forward with information. The ethics board should be empowered to field complaints from public employees and others who have knowledge of wrongdoing. Now, this is something that I think is going to come down to legalese. The argument here is that the Independent Ethics Board should be the place where employees should be able to get whistleblower protection. Right now, I think there is a conflict among the statutes and the ordinances about who can offer that protection. So, I support this. Think that that is, you know, we've got this Independent Ethics Board. We supported it with 70% of a vote during a referendum. Let's use it. Number three, ending no-bid contracts. The write-up from Jeremy Matlow is competitive bidding is the hallmark of good public policy. Requiring two public hearings to sell off public land can help repair the city's reputation for favoritism and development decisions and safeguard taxpayer dollars to ensure people are always getting a fair deal when it comes to land we as a community own. I have a problem with this proposal, and I'll give you an example of why. You know, Commissioner Matlow made a big deal about the $8 million bid, unsolicited bid for two lots downtown from a Houston development company, hotel development company. And the bid of $8 million, you know, the argument is that you're going to get a fairer price if you do a competitive bid. And so my question is, here we have, I'll show you why competitive bids can be a problem. You've got a development company with a serious track record of building high-end hotel projects who is wanting to invest $8 million in these two pieces of property. So that's their price, $8 million. What if you put that up for competitive bid and you have a nonprofit that comes in and wants to give you $8.5 million for that property? Now, if you did it basically, if you awarded the project based on cost, then you would give it to the nonprofit. But that is not in the best interest of the city of Tallahassee from, and this is where it comes into a political answer. It's not in the best interest if your interest in expanding your tax base to generate more revenue to pursue the mission of the city of Tallahassee, because a nonprofit buying that is not going to generate any tax dollars moving forward. Now, if you think that the nonprofit is in the best interest of the city of Tallahassee because you think there's a different mission than just promoting growth, then sure. But you can argue that. And that's the reason why the city of Tallahassee has this policy where the city commission can override the competitive bid policy when it's not in the best interest of Tallahassee. So the argument here would be that the 3-2 vote to move forward with the hotel development downtown was viewed as being in the best interest, and that was defined as supporting economic growth, jobs, and also expanding the tax base. The two people that voted against it, Commissioner Matlow and Commissioner Porter, you know, they argued that that was not in the best interest. But to use that as that decision as a support for an ethical reform, I don't think is a good idea. No doubt, and you know, more practically, if someone comes to bid on a paint job at your home, and one bids $5,000 and has loads of experience, and another one bids $2,000, and this is the second house he's painted, you know, does that necessarily mean that the lower price is the best option for you? So I think there's a little bit more nuance on this. So I'm not gonna, I don't like the ending all no bid contracts. It should be a priority, but there are definitely situations when the city commission should be able to override this, and it should be, again, it should be full disclosure on what they're overriding and why. And that's what they did with that project downtown with the hotels. All right, banning for life anyone convicted of honest services fraud. Look, I think that is part of the law already. I don't think that Commissioner Scott Maddox can run for elected offices again. I know he lost his bar license, so I'm not really sure how number four would be implemented locally. Number five, a complete audit of all contracts, policies, and personnel decisions influenced by former Commissioner Scott Maddox. You know, I think this is much too focused on Commissioner Maddox. I think that we should be looking at what has happened in the past with a lot of different projects, not we're just affiliated with Mr. Maddox. If we look at what we're dealing with here, lobbyist reform, I think we should be looking at projects that were lobbied for by specific people and who voted for those. So again, I think I would dismiss number five as too focused. And again, maybe there to generate more of an emotional response because it has Commissioner Maddox's name attached to it. The last one, a vendor code of ethics. Entities that receive public funding must be held to a high ethical standard. Any vendors found to use an unregistered lobbyist should forfeit any right to taxpayer dollars. You know, I don't have any problem with a vendor code of ethics. This would be more of a reason, you know, of a signed document that's going to let people that are bidding on projects to know exactly what is expected. So if you go back and look at these in summary, I like the closing the lobbyist loophole idea. I like expanding the whistleblower protections, and I like the vendor code of ethics. Those are the three I think that anybody could get behind. Again, closing the lobbyist loophole includes a couple different things. It's the definition of a lobbyist, and it's also keeping logs. Staffers and elected officials, I think, need to keep logs of who's meeting with them, what they're discussing. And I think it's a good idea at city commission meetings to acknowledge who is lobbied on these projects or on these items that are going to be voted on. So I'm all in on that one. So look, this is something that's going to be addressed. The Independent Ethics Board has dealt with it. I know there's some back and forth on some definitions here, but I would expect in October that the city commission will be voting on something like this. It will be interesting to see which ones get accepted. As I said, I don't think they're all equal. These six that Jeremy Matlow put up, I think he's on point with three of them. The other three, I think, they're going to be open for debate for practical reasons, and also think for consistency across ordinances and statutes. So we'll stay tuned on that. All right, when we get back, we'll pivot back to the reporting on COVID here locally. As I said, I have sort of lost my patience with some of the numbers, or not numbers, some of the context and the narratives that we're seeing in headlines that I think just did not do a lot to move us forward here. So we'll talk about that when we get back. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right. I hope your Tuesday is going well. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. All right. Take a deep breath here. Going to pivot to COVID. You know, there's, again, I guess I'm not breaking a lot of new ground here. This is more about informing. There's no doubt that the discussion on the COVID issue has become, you know, emotional, a battle between journalistic narratives. If you're not careful, you know, you can take these numbers and just do about anything you want with them. You know, one of the things that we did at Talos Reports early on was just put up three graphs without any comment of the cases, hospitalizations, and fatalities, and just left them there for people to look at in the beginning of the pandemic. But as, you know, this pandemic has aged, as it has matured, there becomes more and more nuance. Obviously, there's now another variant. So there is, you know, there is the vaccination. There is, you know, so many, there's now more data, obviously, to evaluate. So it's not as, it's more difficult to report on because there now is more information, more angles. And so it is also more obvious, or it's a lot easier to mislead. And so anyway, having said that, I've watched these school board meetings come and go over the last couple of months, and I've heard stupid statements. I shouldn't say stupid. I will say, take that back. I will say uninformed statements by parents who get up to speak on, you know, on both sides of the issue. I've heard probably one of the most uninformed statements ever spoken by an at one of these school board meetings by an actual elected official, when Ms. Bowen made the comment that, you know, we can't teach kids who are dead, which was a, you know, the implication that COVID was just ravaging through schools here. And I think, you know, the issue on that is, I talked about that comment here on the air, but it was never addressed from the other media outlets that were there and heard it. Although I will tell you that the Talos Democrat reporter that covers the Leon School Board, and I'm going to butcher her name here, Anna Nguyen Lesson, I guess is how you say it. Maybe I'll learn that later. But, you know, I have appreciated so much in how she covers these meetings with her tweets. But one of the downfalls of tweeting so much is you eventually reveal your bias. And, you know, the thing here is pointing out the misinformation and comments on one side of the argument and not addressing context or nuance reflects a bias. And I've seen that in the coverage, and you see it on a lot of different reporters that have, you know, Twitter accounts and feel the need to tweet on everything. And so, although, you know, I understand the situation and I understand the jobs of a reporter, and I've sort of stayed away from going too strong or being too critical. But that, I guess, that day has ended with this article from this reporter that is in the Talos Democrat titled "The New Hunger Games? ? Leon High Students Reflect on School Life During a Pandemic." Now, if you go through and read this article, you know, you are going to be, I think, struck by the lack of context and the emotional quotes that are attributed to these high school students that I can only assume, after reading this, are some of the most uninformed people that are in our community. And I would say that, I say that from a numbers perspective. I say it from someone who is making a quote, then should at least be given some information on, wait, do you understand this? Now, the subtitle is, they feel anxious, scared, and angry. They don't feel safe. So Hunger Games obviously is not something I watch, but it involves people dying. And so that's the reference here in this title. And the article says that death or causing the death is a real concern among these high school students. Well, right after that, and I believe that that is a concern, but I think it's a journalist's responsibility to, right after that point is made, to provide context about what has happened in this school's district with 33,000 students, referencing in reference to people dying of COVID. Another thing is there's a joke. Their jokes are dark. They say high school is like the TV show Glee, but people are dying. Okay. Again, no context referenced in this article. Hannah said the district's, well, so those are the two things on the whole idea of death. And, you know, again, there definitely are people dying. There are kids that are dying of COVID, but again, you have to put it in context. If you were to talk to these high school people and ask them, you know, about COVID deaths in teenagers, you know, there is a 3-time higher chance of dying from homicide than COVID. A 7-time chance of dying from suicide. Almost 10 times greater chance of dying in a vehicle accident. And 1.5 times dying from flu and pneumonia. So the point on this is that if those people at Leon High School, those students, had those numbers, would their perspective on COVID be any different? You know, if not, they're not being rational, they're being emotional, which is absolutely fine, but that is something that is the duty of a journalist to point out. And it's not happening. These headlines do nothing but, again, reinforce this fear. They don't provide any context whatsoever. And, you know, again, another critique here, because this article is void of context or actual real-life information, is there's a quote in here that Hannah said districts will surpass last year's case total, by the end of this month. Well, the next paragraph should probably say something. That's given the fact that there was digital learning available last year, and it's not a comparable number, but it's not. And so, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, I don't know the motives of this writer. I've never spoken to this writer. I will hold the editor of this newspaper as the one who is responsible for this. This is, it's a poor look from a journalistic standpoint. And look, I'm going to continue now to call this out because if you're not going to put this in context, if you're out, you know, to basically scare people and to promote a narrative that promotes your side, and I can't believe that we have a side on this. I mean, you know, this, but that's what it's come down to. And this article is the exact reason we have a side. It is a one-sided article with no context. It is disjointed from anything that is real. It is a nothing but a, I mean, this is something you would actually, I would expect better in a high school newspaper. And, you know, again, if you go back and look, you don't have to be a journalist to understand that one of the first couple of things they tell you in journalism school is to provide context and to be fair in terms of which side you're promoting. Do they really have a reason to be scared? Well, let's explain that. They may feel that way, but are there reasons to talk about why they shouldn't be scared? It's depressing to see this type of story, given what we have available to us in terms of the numbers. And again, I think it all goes back to the leadership. And when you look at the numbers and the impact of this pandemic on kids, there's a major difference between the impact number on kids in terms of deaths and even hospitalizations than on other age groups. And when you have that, I don't think you should celebrate it, but you should note it so that people are not scared. And they don't fear for their life. This is the one thing that, even with the Delta variant, this is the one thing that we could talk about is, look, you know, COVID for kids is not as deadly as flu. Surely it's not as deadly as suicide. And so I don't understand why we're not promoting that and encouraging that so our kids can get back to some level of normalcy. With that, and a little note from Bob Seger, we will return after this break to get you caught up on what's going on with the Leon County Commission meeting. Stay tuned. On a corner at midnight,
trying to get my courage up.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I was just typing in my browser here, TalisReports.com. That's a good thing to do. Anyway, Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen. But quality materials like granite quartz and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And we appreciate their sponsorship here on Above the Fold. And look, I wanted to get you up to date on a Leon County Commission meeting today and go over a couple things that we actually did some stories on. And one of the things I think is interesting is that Leon County Commission is going to consider a bid for the World Athletics Cross Country Championship. Now, the this would be held at the Apalachee Regional Park, where they have developed. I mean, this is something that we've written about previously, and Leon County has done a great job of turning that into a world-class cross country facility. And it is since 2009 here in the story, it says the Leon County Division of Tourism has hosted nearly 70 large scale meets and 8 national championships with over $40 million in direct spending to the local economy. In addition, the park serves as home cross country course to Florida State University, Taos Community College, and Leon County Schools. And so what's going on here is the board is going to consider today voting for the ability to spend $250,000 bid for Leon County to host the 2026 World Athletics Cross Country Championship during the next board meeting. Well, that's when they're going to consider that, which is today. Now, if the board approves the proposed item and the bid is submitted, the funds for the deposit will come from the Division of Tourism Fund. For the execution of the event, potential host committees must guarantee a minimum commitment of just under $2 million. This amount includes the deposit. It is expected that state and national partner organizations, corporate sponsorships, and additional revenue opportunities will offset these expenses. It says here, should the county be awarded the bid, the World Athletics Cross Country Championship will be held at ARP. In January 2020, the board approved numerous renovations at the park, totaling almost $3 million. So that is something that the Leon County Commission is going to take up today. Now, another thing that they're going to deal with is this opioid settlement. We have reported on this a little bit in the past, but there is because of the opioid crisis that we had, there were a number of companies that were being sued. They've declared bankruptcy, and there's going to be a lot of money coming forward. And so the cities, municipalities, and counties are going to be in line for some of this money, and that will be used, that's supposed to be directed to rehabilitation associated with the impacts of the opioid crisis. And so they're going to vote on moving forward with the actual terms of this agreement. So that's something that that will be addressed. Also, as we talked about last time, they had this special meeting related to the COVID issue. And it didn't go over very well. Commissioner Christian Dozier was pushing for this meeting. Chairman Rick Miner acquiesced. They held the meeting, and there was a lot of blowback in terms of why are we meeting. And they had a little bit of discussion on the information that was available in terms of the COVID numbers. Nobody was going to support a mask mandate, an indoor mask mandate, although there was, that was sort of the indication of what the meeting was held for. As Commissioner Nick Maddox said, you know, we're here to consider something that we can't legally do and that nobody has really asked for. And he was referring to medical authorities or medical people not asking for an indoor mask mandate. And so now what they did, they did at the end of the meeting say, look, in our next regularly scheduled meeting, please bring back some recommendations for any kind of COVID mitigation policies we might be able to implement. And the statement of the issue on the item that will be considered today, as directed by the board at the September 7th special meeting, this item provides an analysis of policy options regarding additional mitigative measures the county may implement to slow the spread of COVID. Specifically, the item provides information and seeks board direction. That's the key, seeks board direction on whether to implement a face covering requirement within Leon County government facilities and whether to implement a requirement for tourism and grant recipients to require face coverings at county-funded events. So this is a very narrow issue, and it's going to be interesting to see how this goes over. This is basically going to be focused on two things. There'll probably be votes on should they require face masks within government facilities, and that may be libraries, obviously, and any other. This would not apply to constitutionally elected officers like supervisor of elections and the sheriff's office, a clerk, and also whether anybody that is getting a tourism grant and has, for example, a concert, should they be required to mandate face coverings at these events if they're receiving county money? So, look, again, it's a very narrow issue here, and so but that is something that will be addressed at the meeting. Now, all right, the last thing that we wanted to talk about is the Thomasville Road multi-use path. Now, this is something that is being taken up by the CRPTA. We've got an article on the project up on Talis Reports, CRPTA to hear update on Thomasville Road multi-use path project. Now, that was yesterday that they heard the update, on September 13th. If you go to this story, we basically went through the 33-page analysis and pulled out major sections that would give you an idea of exactly what this is. Now, I will tell you that I was not completely up to date on this. We got a couple of phone calls about it. I think it looks like a really neat project. However, there are some safety concerns. And if you go back and if you read this article, you'll have plenty of links to get to the feasibility study, the Facebook page, and you'll see what's coming up. There's more citizen input coming up in September and October and November on this project. But basically, this is a 10-foot wide path that's going to be, they want to build from Midtown all the way down Thomasville Road to the Market District. And when you hear Thomasville Road, you think, oh, they're going to build this path right next to Thomasville Road. Now, there's some segments that will be next to Thomasville Road, but some of it gets off of Thomasville Road and goes through neighborhoods. And the idea is obviously to create a walkable path that can be used, I guess, also for bikes and pedestrians. And, you know, this is something, if you go and look, which was a big hit in Atlanta, Georgia. There's a big bike path in Atlanta, or a multi-use path that cuts through the city, and it has generated a lot of interest. The concern here is I think that there is what they call cut-throughs or cuts. This would be driveways or additional streets. There's 45 what they call cuts in the path from Midtown up to the Market District. And there are people that are talking about the safety issues. And so I guess that's going to have to be mitigated. But you know, they list for the project 7 goals. And you know, you can go to our website and look at these 7 goals. And they also, we have a link or a section on the citizen input and their concerns. Most of the concerns, again, that are against this are related to the driver's speed, traffic noise, and air pollution, and also to the safety of pedestrians and bikers. And so those who support are related to improving connections to neighborhoods and activity centers. So go take a look at that. And this is something that'll be addressed over the next couple of months. And I think is a neat project if they can get the safety issues dealt with. All right, that's all we have for you today. I appreciate you tuning in, and we'll be back on Thursday at noon. Stay tuned for the Jeff Cameron Show. Have a great afternoon.
Gonna be a bride.